Welcome to the Authors Podcast with Lisa Newton. Writing a book is a dream for many people, and in today's society, it has become easier and more important than ever. If you are an expert, speaker, coach, or an authority in your field, having a book is the new business card. It can increase your credibility, enhance your status, and make you the go-to person in your field, opening doors and bringing a flood of opportunities straight to you. You can increase your fees and start choosing the clients you really want to work with. The Authors Podcast Show with Lisa Newton is designed to inspire, educate, and inform you, both entrepreneur and individual, on how to write a book, as well as writer's tips and strategies on how to actually get that book written. On today's show, you learn more about how to write a book, including writing ideas, marketing, and how to succeed in getting a book written. Here we go with the Authors Podcast, and here is your host, Lisa Newton.
Welcome to another episode of the Authors Podcast. Today, my guest is Yvonne John. Yvonne is the author of Dreaming of the Life Unlived, Intimate Stories and Portraits of Women Without Children. Yvonne was never sure if she really wanted children, but knew that she was expected to get married and have a family in that order. Somewhere in between her dreams of travelling and experiencing what life had to offer, Yvonne did wish for the perfect family, a husband and four children. By the time she had reached her 30s, this dream had lost its momentum. And when she reached her mid-30s, Yvonne had given up on the dream of being a wife and mother. Because of her past, Yvonne had decided that it was now time to live by her choices. She believed that the opportunity to become a mother had passed, so it was time to move on. It wasn't until Yvonne met her husband at 38 that her faith in love was reignited. A year into their marriage, Yvonne and her husband decided to try for a baby, which led to the unexpected sadness that was to follow when Yvonne was informed that she had unexplained infertility. While trying to understand her grief, Yvonne was introduced to Gateway Women, where she is now on the journey of forgiveness and renewed self-discovery. Yvonne, about dreaming of a life unlived.
Hello.
Hello. First of all, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I've read up on your blog. I've spoken to a few friends about it. There's just so much to say, so much to ask you. I'm just quite excited by this interview. So let's sort of start really then at the point at which you decided that you want to write a book about sort of your kind of experience, because it's quite a personal thing and I think it's very personal. So I'm quite, you know, in awe of people who share, you know, such sort of intimate details, because it is a very, very personal thing. What was it that made you decide that you actually wanted to write a book?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I'm in a support group called Gateway Women, and I was on a Plan B mentorship program. I started that in 2015. So during that process, I had wonderful women around me. There was about 15 of us in the group, and every month we meet and have different things we're discussing. So during the time, quite early on in the process, listening to the other women's stories and reflecting on my own experience, one of the things that was very obvious and it resonated with all of us was that people weren't really listening or weren't really hearing what we were saying. You know, we're in a position, and that's if we could talk about it, where we're saying we can't have children, this was our journey, we're sad about it, and people would want to fix it. You know, you shouldn't feel like that, no, and you could do this, you could do that. And there was always this fixing element of it and this miracle baby story element of it that made me realize people are not really hearing what we need them to hear. And I just sat there and said, you know what, I'm going to write a book about it. I want to give us back our voices. And that's started.
Okay, that's very interesting. So Gateway Women, that was another one of my questions. So tell me a little bit about what Gateway Women is and how you came across them.
So Gateway Women is a organisation or a support group for women, supporting women who are childless by circumstance. I was fortunate in my journey that early on in my grief process, my friend who had been through it all had said, "You're in grief and you need to speak to Jodie Day, who is the organiser, founder of Gateway Women." And that's how I was introduced to it. And she put me in touch with Gateway. Yeah, and my friend, another lady who's been in my support group, her, describes it as therapy in your pocket, because, as I said, they're an online community and you can log on, you can type in questions, you can say, "I'm feeling really horrible today, this has happened." And there is always somebody there to offer you support and understanding. And even if it's just to say, "Oh yeah, I really understand," because people who are not in this position don't truly understand what we're going.
Tell me what that position is.
It's this endless cycle of grief. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that every day is the most painful thing for me and I don't want to leave my house and I can't face children. But there are times when I do feel like that. And women are in different stages of their grief, and some women stay in certain stages longer than others. For me, going through that help has led me to a place where I can just manage it a lot better. So 2-3 years on, I still feel it, and I can still feel it deeply. It's just not as hard as it was at the beginning of that. The whole thing is, it is grief. I even found it difficult to understand it was grief because I hadn't lost anything. And it's what's known as disenfranchised grief. But it's that grief of the loss of not being able to be a mum. And in a position where I can see families or mums with their young ones and be sad because I'm never going to experience that. I can hear stories of my dad talking about his grandchildren and know he'll never have those stories of my children. My children will never experience the joys of playing, sitting on his lap, playing with him, you know, saying silly things to him that makes him laugh. It's sitting in a room when somebody's excited they're going to be a grandmother and knowing I will never have that experience. You know, there's so many of them.
Okay. Have you got brothers and sisters?
I have 2 brothers.
Okay. Have you got nieces and nephews?
Both my brothers have children. My older brother has 2 boys and a girl, and my younger brother has 1 boy, 1 girl, and 1 on the way.
Okay. All right. Are you from a rather large family? Because that was one of the questions that someone asked me. You know, some ethnic groups particularly come from very, very, very family orientated backgrounds, and it can make events sometimes quite difficult when family members, all very well meaning, are saying, "Oh, you know," those kind of situations.
Yes. So I have 2 brothers. We have cousins. But my dad is very family orientated. So he loves to have the family around him. And he has grandchildren as well, as I've mentioned. My husband he's one of 5 siblings, and they all have families ranging from 2 to 4 children. And a lot of cousins. They're a very close-knit family. And it's one of the things that I really noticed about them when I met, because there is a lot of them. They have a lot of family gatherings, which is absolutely great. But as you've mentioned, sometimes it's so difficult to be there because it's that thing where you feel like you have nothing to contribute to this, because it's just me and my husband. And we come along and there's people there with their partners, their children. And at the moment we're in the position of the younger ones are now starting to be pregnant.
Yes.
And so there's that whole joy of an excitement of, "Oh my God, they're pregnant. I'm going to be a grandmother. I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that." And all of that that comes in it. And you really feel like you can't contribute to that, and you don't have a place and you don't belong. And it feels very isolating, and it is difficult. There's times when I've gone round to family events and I've sat there and I thought, "I really have to leave." And my husband's taken me, he's been great. He takes me away and takes me for a walk because I need that space to be able to actually just cry and acknowledge, actually, I'm feeling like this, and allow that feeling to be there so I can go back in that room.
Okay. So grief, there's different stages of grief that you mentioned. I think one time, many years ago, I read it can last for 2 years, grief, you know, like the so-called cycles. But you have mentioned, you know, it's sort of everlasting as well.
Yeah. One of the things that I think society has led us to believe is that grief is a linear process, and there are 5 stages. And for the life of me, I cannot remember all 5 stages.
No, neither can I.
You start at one end.
Yes.
You start at one end and you get to the other. So you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I'm done. And that process could be a week, whatever, a month, a year, 2 years, but there is an end point to it.
Right.
A friend of mine described grief as a cycle, as a sphere, sorry. And what I realized is actually I'm that spool in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And if you can imagine that sphere going around, at some points it's further away and some points it's closer. And that's, for me, that's what grief is. So it's always there. Mm-hmm. It just hits me at different points. So some points it's not as bad because it's further away. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ah, there's nothing here today. And some points it's like, oh, this is really tough today. And that's why I don't think you ever leave it. I just think it's, you're at different places. Some experiences will touch you a lot deeper than others. Mm. Some you'll feel like, oh, there was nothing today. Ah, maybe I am over it. And then another day you think, oh no, it's not great today. I don't want to actually face it. And I think I just really believe it's that. And I think when we allow ourselves to understand, actually, it's always there, we just put in mechanisms to help us deal with it a lot better. We prepare ourselves a lot better and we just manage it a lot better. But it's about accepting it and allowing it and not trying to put it away and push it down in this, you know, I shouldn't be like this. It should have been over by now. I should be able, you know, I should have moved through it or be past it by now, because I just don't believe that's what the case is.
I think if I recall back, and this was many years ago, it's sadness, fear, anger, and then eventually acceptance. I think that is the last stage.
Yeah.
As they say in the whatever that model is. It's interesting that you, as you say, disenfranchised grief, this sort of experience is being labelled as that. I hadn't heard of that one before, so that's very interesting. You were listening to The Authors Podcast with me, your host, Lisa Newton. You can email me, lisa@lisanewton.co.uk. And remember, we have The Inner Circle, which is for writers just like you. And you can join us at writerbook.net. If you're just tuning in, I am talking to Yvonne John, who is the author of Dreaming of the Life Unlived: Intimate Stories and Portraits of Women Without Children. Yvonne, you talked about Gateway Women and that it's an online community. Do you ever meet up sort of face to face?
Yes, we do. Now, I've been in a support group. I did my Plan B mentorship group and mentorship program 2 years ago. So the women on that program, we meet up as regularly as we can. Mm. But outside of that, there are online meetup forums. And within those forums, there are monthly meetups, so you can get to meet other women in the same situation. Some are new to it, some have been there a long time. But, you know, we can meet up as a group and just have a great time.
And is that where you got most of the material for your book? I'm sure you let them know that you were writing a book. Did any of them volunteer? Protecting their identity, but yeah.
So the ladies in my support group, most of them volunteered and kind enough to be a part of the book. Mm. I had a couple of friends outside of Gateway Women that I knew who were childless, and they wanted to be a part of the project as well. And it was their opportunity to actually tell their stories, because especially for one of the ladies I'm thinking of, she had been silenced for so long because, again, a culture thing. Mm. How do you talk about it? How do you say this? And there are cultures who don't in a way accept childlessness, because that is, you know, that is part of being a woman, and you get married and you have children.
Yes.
She had been silenced for years, so she did feel that this was an opportunity for her actually to speak up, and she found it a very wonderfully healing process for herself. Mm. I had some women that I had asked who from my meetup group, and they weren't ready. Mm. And that was another important thing to acknowledge in that, because not everybody can tell their stories.
And do you find that it's women who don't have children who understand, quote unquote, other women who don't have children? Or is it like a bonding thing, or can others, you know, be led to understand the what you're going through?
I think there is a level of understanding amongst women without children. That is not all the women have, sorry, women with children. So I've met mothers who I've spoken to, who I've described what I've been through, and some of them have been able to understand it. And that understanding has come from their journeys of becoming mums. Mm. So what I found is the ones that who had struggled, and I just use that word very loosely, but who had some kind of struggle, 7 months, 2 years, whatever it was, to conceive, they were the ones that could tap in and understand the anxiety of trying to conceive. But because they ended in having a baby, that's kind of where it ended. And even in that, some people, in a way, have forgotten about it, because it, you know, it was like it was all okay because I had a baby in the end. But there are a good number of women that do not, who, or mothers, I should say, who don't understand for a variety of reasons, but they don't. So it, there is an incredible strength in us women, and Jodie Day calls it a tribe.
Yeah.
Of, so, you know, as I said, there's incredible strength in having that forum, that society, that tribe, where you know that women get it, because you just have to say, oh, this really sucked, because why do they have to do that? And instantly somebody will get it.
Yes.
They're not trying to fix it either, you know, they're allowing it.
And when you say fix it, what sort of do people do, or... You know.
I mean, I've had stories from other women as well. So I remember somebody telling me their sister is in the same situation. And they said to their sister, oh, you shouldn't be sad because you have a really good job. And I was like, you know, and it's not a criticism in any way. It's just for people to understand how this is unhelpful. Mm. And, you know, I turned around and said, I can guarantee you I have a whole bunch of women that would give up their jobs today if somebody put a baby in their arms. Mm. You know, and it's things like that. It's like, and you know, the things like, oh, you're really lucky because you must have loads of money and you can go on holiday whenever you like.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh goodness, these things ain't true. We still have a life.
Yes.
We still have commitments and responsibilities. It's just not the same as yours. Mm. You know, and this perception that we're just these carefree women that just flying around the world, you know. Just being really irresponsible.
Yes. Having a great time. Yes.
This is it. Well, you know, my favourite one at the moment, and I'd heard people mention this, and now I'm getting a lot of it, is that, you know, you must be a career woman. And it's like, I did not put my career, even though I don't consider myself as being a career woman, over having a family. I'm sure there are women out that did put it off for whatever reasons. And you know what? That is actually okay. Mm. You know, we all made choices in our life, but it's almost like those choices are being thrown back at us when people go, oh, you're just one of those career women, aren't you? Mm. And I was like, oh no, I just actually tried to make a life for myself so that I could be happy and comfortable and whatever, you know, I wanted to be in that.
Exactly. Yeah. That's very interesting. You've just brought up so many things. I've just got so many things going through my mind that I'm just trying to, you know, not fire off in too many directions here.
Yes.
But let's talk about society. I want to talk about society because there's so much I can say. One of the statistics that you quoted to me, it said that statistics show that 1 in 5 women in the UK have turned 45 without having children.
Yes.
I don't know what the statistic used to be, let's say, a generation or two ago, but why might that be, or why do you think that is, or do you have a theory on that, or, you know?
Well, right, I don't have a theory on it because I haven't really got into it and thought about it in that way.
However, well, actually, sorry, that's actually me assuming that number has increased. I don't know if that has always remained the same, actually. So 1 in 5 women, that's 20%. I don't know if that's fluctuated, or I'm assuming it's gone up.
It's well, what I'm going to do is read an extract. So Jodie Day has a book called Living the Life Unexpected. Okay. And in her book, she has these statistics. And, you know, I've got my statistics from her research. Now, what she's mentioned, I'm trying to find the bits I want. What she's mentioned is the last time the rate of childlessness was high in the population was for women born around the 1900s. Research has shown that this was due to two factors: large number of women who remained unmarried due to the loss of so many men in the First World War, yes, and the effect of the Great Depression of the 1930s on both fertility and finances. Mm. Rather shockingly, these women were known as surplus women. Wow. She goes on to say, UK and Ireland. According to the UK Office for National Statistics, 20% of women were born between 1961 and 66 and remain without children, dropping slightly to 19% for those born in 1967. The most recent completed childbearing data available for those born in 1968 drops again to 18%. However, this is still double the 11% of those mothers' generation, of their mother's generation. From speaking to many childless women born in the 70s, I think it's quite likely that this may grow to 25% of women because of the combined impact of social infertility, being unable to find a suitable partner, along with delaying or not feeling able to have children for financial reasons due to the global economic downturn since 2008. The data available so far shows that up to 47% of women born in the 70s were childless at the age of 30, compared to up to 28% of their mother's generation, which may be one such early sign. Ireland's rate of childlessness is similarly 18% for those born in 1965.
Right. So the statistic to watch out for, I suppose, is women born in the 70s,
yes,
who at the moment, by 2008, by the time they got to 30, 47% of them, almost half, still hadn't had any children at that point.
That's right, yeah.
Wow. Very, very interesting. And you see, interesting, with society, you use the word surplus women, and there's all these words for women who haven't got children, barren yeah. women, and
yes,
there's a few others that I'm not even going to throw out there because it's all very, very, very negative. I think it's very interesting because a friend I was talking to today, she was saying, and she's from an African culture, it's that, you know, it's in her experience, it's extremely, you know, looked down upon if you mm-hmm. don't have children. And one of the things that you mentioned in Blurb was like how people are childless by circumstance. I think we can talk about circumstances now because I think that's an interesting choice of word, because some people are childless by choice and people really talk about that. They think that can never be the case.
Yes. It's an interesting one because I have met women who are childless by choice that have had very negative experiences yes. from it. You know, and it's a, as you said, it's like, how do you mean you're choosing not to have children?
Exactly.
And I think the instant thing is, what, you don't like them? And it's not about that at all. Mm. And they've even been called selfish, which
yes.
I find quite, I mean, what?
Yes.
That just baffles me.
Yes.
They're selfish because they're choosing a life that they want to have. I mean, in a way, we're all selfish for the choices we make. I could call a mother selfish because depending on the reasons why she wanted to have children. But, you know, why do we use that word so negatively?
Yeah.
Because isn't selfishness about looking after ourselves, putting ourselves first, you know, which can be one of the most empowering, positive things we can do in our lives, depending on why we're doing it. Mm. You know, it is very interesting that people see it that way. Mm. But, you know, I just don't understand why people have to be so negative about the whole thing. And you know, we were supposed to be mums, so there's something wrong with you because you're not.
Right. And this level of judgment that exists, is there? Do you think it comes more from women, or do you think it comes more from men, or is it older women, or is it younger women, or is it everyone? What do you think?
It's probably all of the above. I mean, I've noticed it probably because I've spoken to women more than men, but I do notice it a lot from women. And we can put ourselves down for some very strange reason. Maybe there's a lot of competition around us for various reasons. But yeah, I have found it from women, and I found it very hard because, I mean, it's even questioned, I've questioned myself about why do I want to be a mum? And I realise that we don't actually do that as a society. We don't question, why do we want this? Why do we want that? It is expected to happen. Mm. And we've had those messages from the time we were children. So I think because we're doing that as a society, it's then you get to this place where you can't actually understand and accept that there are women that don't have children for whatever reason, for the many circumstances that it can come about. And therefore we find, or, you know, people have found it hard to place us because, you know, our place is to do this, this and this. And once you break that norm, what do we do with you?
Right. And that's the interesting word, surplus women, because I suppose that's how the government looked upon a lot of women in the, say, maybe post Second World War, First and Second World War in the UK that didn't have children for various reasons, surplus women. And I think even, you know, years ago, let's say in the 1600s or so, if you was a woman and you didn't have any kids, they'd call you a witch, chase you out of the village and take all your property and your assets and everything you had.
Yeah.
It's not looking good, is it? But
it isn't.
For men, do you think that they have the same sort of stigma?
There is something. It's interesting because I think it's easier for men, for people not to know if a man has a child or not.
Yeah.
Because men don't talk about it and bond in the same way women do. You know mothers because mothers bond and they're, you know, it's either you see it because they've got a pram or, you know, there's something visible, or they will talk about it within 5 minutes of opening up a conversation with you.
Yes.
So it's very obvious. Men don't talk like that. I've been around men and I've known men for a while, or a certain person for a while, and still wonder, do they have children? Mm. Because I haven't, you know, they do not talk about it in the same way women do. And I think something interesting my husband said to me recently was, we were due to go to the Caribbean on holiday, and he said, people are going to ask him what's wrong with him because he doesn't have children, you know. And I was talking to a female friend about it, and she was like, yeah, it's that whole thing, you know, what's wrong with you? You can't be a man because you didn't conceive. And, you know, it really brought a different thought process. And I just didn't kind of appreciate all of that until my husband had said it. That I think once a man does come out and say he doesn't have children, then instantly people are going to start to have that judgment. I think their places are very different in society anyway. But
yes.
As I said, I realised actually there is that impact when they come out and say it. There's going to be that, definitely, that there is that stigmatism around it. Mm. Because men are supposed to, especially in the Caribbean culture, men are supposed to be sowing their seeds. You know, and, and, you know, there is, I know from myself in my 20s, I remember in my 20s and 30s, it was about how many children, it didn't matter how many women, you know, but it was about how many children you were having, and you were a man, you were a stud because you had loads of them.
Yes, it's so culture, it plays a big role, really, because I think maybe in Western society, you know, being in the UK, being in Europe, where the average family sizes, I think it used to be 2.4 kids, because I remember that TV show, and I think now it's something like 1.9, and I think in Italy or in France it's just dropped below one, so it's like 0.9. so I suppose in some cultures it's not as prevalent, if you like, or, you know, in, I don't know what the word is, but it's not as bad, if you like, than in others.
Yeah.
But to those people out there then, you know, who come up to you or say to someone, because you, like you say, women talk a lot, and it's as soon as they open their mouth, oh, have you got any kids then? You say no. What next? You move the conversation along, because sometimes people can be quite, I think, quite rude by saying, oh, well, why not? Oh, why? Or, you know, and sometimes I think they're not being malicious or deliberate.
Yeah.
It just falls out their mouth. I think it can be quite insensitive, really.
It can be. And I think it comes down to not knowing what to do with us. So therefore, they don't know what to say, because all of a sudden you've lost your place in this whole conversation. It's like, And I do remember a friend, an Asian friend of mine, saying she was with her friend who has children. A friend of that friend had come along, bounced along. And it was like, so how many children do you have? And my friend said, none. And she looked at her and walked away. And I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe that happened. And she was utterly hurt by that experience, which is understandable.
Of course.
And, you know, what do you do? And, you know, I think I would have thrown a rock at the woman's head. I'm still human. You know, I've experienced the whole. So it's interesting because there are different levels and elements of this. And it does depend on who they are to you. Like, did you just meet, or is this someone who's known you for a while and has just realized your situation? Mm. So different things happen. I've had the best things that have happened are, oh, that sounds really tough. And, you know, even though they didn't know what else to say, it was okay, because you know what, you've acknowledged that this is a difficult situation. Mm. And it probably was just as difficult for them because they didn't know what else to do with it. Mm. But the harder to handle ones are the really personal. So
yes,
what's happened, you know, so what about adoption then? Have you not thought of that? You know, you can do that these days. You know, there's IVF, because I live in a bubble and I've never heard of these things. And, you know, and if you are able to explain a bit more because of, again, that relationship, again, you get the, you know, I remember explaining that, you know, well, I have unexplained infertility. It's a really tough time. And someone went, well, I know someone who got told that and they have three children now. Mm. Oh, again, I live in a bubble. I've never heard that before. You know, and I've known women to be told they will never have children and have two. You know, we all know a story, but the point is, I don't need to hear that right now, because it just is a difficult thing. And this is who I am. It's, you know, again, I think it becomes, I don't know what to do with you. I don't know what to say. So I'm going to tell you something that's super helpful and you can go away and do it. And you'll actually be better. Ta-da!
So if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Yvonne John, who is the author of Dreaming of the Life Unlived, Intimate Stories and Portraits of Women Without Children. It's a collection of stories of women who are childless by circumstances and who are coming to terms with their grief and moving towards finding fulfilling lives without children. Are there any stories that particularly leap out at you that you want to share, for example?
I'm just flicking through my book now. Well, my story is called Finding My Voice. That's the first one I'm going to mention. And I chose that title because it was about finding my voice. One of the things about being on the Plan B mentorship program was, you know, Plan A didn't work. So, you know, let's find our Plan Bs. And we did a lot of things around trying to discover what that Plan B was. You know, as I said, the whole thing about my book was not having a voice. It's like we lost our voice, and that resonates with the whole losing our place in society bit. Mm-hmm. So finding my voice was about, or is about, dealing with my past, dealing with the hurts, dealing with the shame, and I use that in inverted commas, and healing from all of that and being able to speak again. Because one of the things I realized, and I'm sure there's a lot of women out there, and I have spoken to women who have said this to me as well, is that the decisions we made, and this is where I changed the word shame to the decisions and mistakes to decisions, was that the decisions we made in our past became this shame, and these known as mistakes that led us to believe that we didn't deserve to be mums and this is why we're here today. And actually, you know what, it isn't, because there are women, there are mothers who made those same decisions who have children. So it was about going back and forgiving myself for all of that. That then allowed me to write this book and tell my story, because that was in itself scary. Mm. So that actually, when I did that, I took ownership and it became the most powerful thing that I could have ever have done. And now nobody can say anything to me now, because I've said all those things to myself, and probably even worse. But because I've forgiven myself, I can stand strong within that. And it's given me the power and the strength to take it forward. So that finding my voice was just such a powerful thing for me to be able to have done in all of this process. Mm. Breaking the silence was another story. You know, again, it was about a lady, an Italian lady who was so bound in. She had so much around her childlessness and the stories that led her to being where she is today. With the whole childlessness thing, that there is a sadness around it, but people don't realize we have gone through so much to be able to stand and say, I don't have children, and guess what, I have a great life now. And breaking the silence for her was that it was, you know what, I'm not going to stand here and let people put me down anymore and judge me. It was about, this is what happened to me, this is how I felt about it, and I'm now standing strong within that.
Yes, excellent. You were listening to the Authors Podcast with Lisa Newton. Please do subscribe to, like, and share this channel. So you have a Facebook page, www.facebook.com/dreamingofalifeunlived.
Yep.
There is a blog post, and that's at bit.ly/findingmyplanb. And those of you who are out there excited, want to buy the book, it's at bit.ly/alifeunlived. And the author is Yvonne John. Yvonne, so when you had this idea for the book, did people, you know, come rushing forward, or did you have to coax them into it?
It was a little bit of both. There wasn't the rushing, but mainly because it's like I get myself in these situations. I have these bright ideas. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to do this. What have I just done? I had this process of figuring out, how am I going to do this in the first place? I was lucky. I found, you know, in all this process, I think I've been extremely fortunate for the people who've been around me. And I belong to a networking group in Luton, where I am, called Women Talk. And the Helen Tucker, who runs Women Talk, heard my story, heard I was going to do this book. And she just said, you know what, it's important and I'm going to help you do it. So she coached me through this process. And it really helped me to consolidate my thoughts and plan and know what I was doing. So when I was able to do that, I then approached the women and said, this is what I need from you. And then they more readily came on board. So they were very excited at the beginning, because they were like, yeah. And they already said they would help me. But once I was able to formulate that plan and know what I wanted from them, then we worked at getting to that end point. So that was actually great. And even putting on a workshop to get them together to work out their stories and what they wanted to tell and how they were going to put it on paper.
It was
a brilliant project. It was great. It was absolutely great. And it was something they all found very useful. And all of them have said, you know, all of us have said it's been a very therapeutic process to do it.
Yes. For those that took part then, did they write their stories, or did you interview them, or how did you extract what you needed from them?
It was a bit of both. So I started with questions I wanted to ask and I interviewed them, and then it moved into them writing their stories, and that's where the workshop came in. So they wrote their stories and then I worked with them to develop those stories. So we did it together. So bounce back and forth, and you know, I worked on it, helped to grow it. I nearly said improve, but it was about growing it, because their stories are great in itself. So we grew it and we worked on it together. And then I brought on an editor as well, who then helped to tidy up the stories and make them book worthy.
Okay. How long would you say the process took? So from the time you had the idea to working on it and then having the finished book in your hand, roughly how long did that whole process take?
It took around 6 to 9 months.
Okay.
And I've met people who said that's incredibly quick. It purely took, I say, that long because I had a coach. So she was really helping me. And because I had that guidance and timelines and deadlines and all of those, it really helped me to work on it and get things done in a more timely fashion. And, you know, again, also keep with the women and working with them. So, yeah, it was great. And I was tell you, I was barely sleeping every lunch break at work. I was in the library writing. I was came okay, home, so I was writing.
Right. You kept a full-time job alongside doing this?
Yes, I did.
Now, that's excellent, because these are the things I like to share on the Authors Podcast, because people will come up with all sorts of excuses as to why they don't have time to do some things. How did you find the time?
I made the time. I think because, I mean, I don't want to say because it was important. I do want to say this, but I don't want to make it sound like, you know, because it was important to me, I did it. It was just, I suppose it was because I have many excuses not to do things. There are other things in my life I'm, you know, I have excuses not to do it. And one of them is I don't have the time. But with this project, I think because of how I was feeling, and I was so eager for this to get out. And also I had loads of people going, when's the book coming out? So it was like, yes. Oh my God, I have to do this now.
Yes.
And then, you know, as I said, the other people there, the women were like, everyone was so excited about it that actually that drove me as well. So, you know, there was a combination of different things. It is about stepping out of your comfort zone. I heard this yesterday, going into that place where, you know what, I want to do it and it needs to get done. So I am going to find that time to do it. So there's other things I had to put a pin in, put a hold on, say no to, because right now this is really important and I really need and want this to happen. So that's why I made it happen in that way.
Yeah. Did you read, you know, you said like you really wanted to do this. Are you aware? I don't know. But are there other books on this subject out there? Or did you just feel like you just wanted to, you know, add your voice and the women that you knew?
Both. There are other books out there. Lisa Mansfield's I'm Taking My Eggs Back Home was a great book that I read before. I love it. I thought, and the title in itself, and I found that, I mean,
yes,
if you go on the Gateway Women website, you will find loads of resources as well.
All
but
right.
When I heard that title, I mean, I'm taking my eggs and going home, I thought, I've got to read this. And Lisa Mansfield also has a blog as well. And that was a great starting point, as well as Jodie's book for me. And when I read those, it just felt, I mean, again, different size. Jodie is more of a self-help book, so she has stories in there, and I've contributed to her book. And she has stories and she gives you guidance and kind of like a workshop in your hand to work through things. Lisa Mansfield was about her journey with her husband and I think IVF, if I remember rightly. But this one was a collection, a collaboration of stories, which actually isn't out there. And it was another forum for people to hear different stories, different aspects. We all had the same end point, but there were different reasons why we were there and different journeys that we got there. And I felt that was so different and a great way to show that it wasn't just me going, oh, this is what I've been through and it's really tough and la la la, but it was other women and different stories. So a person reading it might not connect to my story, but they were connected into another story in the book. And I thought that made it so different and so unique and so important. And I'm so glad that it's out there.
Yes. This is the thing, because sometimes people think, oh, you know, well, there's already a book on that subject, you don't need another one. But no two books are the same. And I think every author has a unique thing that they can bring to the table. And people need to read these things, you know, share the story, get the message out there. Because I think a lot of people live in a bubble and don't understand. I think it's interesting you say, you know, society doesn't know what to do with women who haven't got kids. They haven't got a box for them. And it can be quite, I want to say the word frightening, but, you know, when I've spoken to one guy who's very much into statistics, and he was saying, you know, you've got to look at the statistics, like the birth rate for males and females. And whenever there's a very high birth rate of men to women, that society has a fear of women. You've got to ask yourself sort of why do they, you know, not quite hate women, but almost sort of do, you know, sort of put them down so much. So if you're a woman who doesn't fit the box kind of thing, it can be very frightening, for want of a better word. Even that is an interesting concept. Why do people feel so threatened, if you like, by the concept?
That's really an interesting point. And as you were saying that, it just reminded me that I think all my life, I'm sure maybe from the day I was born, that I'd never fit the mold. So, you know, I remember my 20s and 30s, and it's interesting you reflecting back on what that gentleman has said, because as a woman, I have, so as a young teenager, a young woman, getting into my 30s until now, up until now, I don't believe anyone has been able to know what to do with me, because I've always wanted to break the mold. And that's purely because a man has always has told me that I need to be a certain way, or I shouldn't be this way, or, you know, I'm not going to accept you because of whatever. Mm. So, yeah, I've always, you know, I became this very rebellious person, and I thought, well, no, why do I have to fit into that mold to still be successful or still be this or still be that?
Exactly. So
I always wanted to show that you didn't need to do that. And I think my book probably is part of that rebellious streak in me, is that I'm not a mum, but it doesn't mean I'm not important. It doesn't mean I don't fit. It doesn't mean I don't have a place. I still have that, and I still have a voice, and what I have to say is still important.
Yes. You were listening to The Authors Podcast with me, your host, Lisa Newton. You can email me, lisa@lisanewton.co.uk. And remember, we have The Inner Circle, which is for writers just like you. And you can join us at writerbook.net. So if you're just tuning in, I am talking to Yvonne John, who is the author of Dreaming of the Life Unlived, Intimate Stories and Portraits of Women Without Children. Yvonne, how did you come up with the name of the book, Dreaming of the Life Unlived?
That was a very wonderfully interesting process. What I had done is I had done some brainstorming with my Plan B group. And, you know, I put it out there, and I was like, you know, it was a difficult thing finding a title for your book. Yeah. And I was like, I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that, you know. I was coming up with all sorts of titles, and some of the ladies were coming back, you know, and grief being a word that was going to be in the title, you know, and it was becoming very clear that actually using the word grief or loss and things like that would have quite a negative thing. And, you know, if people saw the word grief, they probably wouldn't read it. And so we wanted to find a title that was inspiring and would intrigue people, entice them to want to pick up that book. And through all of that, and Jodie was a very important part in all of this, you know, Jodie came up with things for me, and then I played around with words and did some research in. Finding My Voice was one of the titles I really wanted to have. But then there's a lot of books called Finding My Voice, and a lot of them are to do with singing. So I thought, oh, that's not really going to work.
Okay.
And again, I didn't want to compete. If there's so many titles, similar titles or the same title out there, I didn't want to put myself in that bracket and compete with that. As I said, I was playing around with the words I had, came up Dreaming of a Life Unlived from different titles, put it all together, and I thought, yeah, you know what, that is it. That's, you know, just saw it on paper and I went, that is it, that's what I wanted.
Excellent. You mentioned having a book coach, Helen Tucker.
Yeah.
How did you find your book coach? So I'm going to talk to you about the process, sort of, the, because this is sometimes this is what stops people. You mentioned having an editor. Where did you find your editor? So the people who collaborated with you on the project, how and where did you find them?
I found Helen through my women's networking group, and she has an organization called IODT in Luton. That's where it all started when it came with the coaching. She does career coaching, personal coachings. So she said, I'm going to help you. And that's how I suppose we knew each other as friends in that respect. And she came on board as my coach. And I think that's a very important part of this, because you mentioned about people finding excuses. I can't do this, I'm scared and whatever. And finding a coach is a really great place to start, because that can help you. And I had done some coaching with Jodie as well. I also did some counselling, because working through the pain of my past was important as well, because if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have been able to write the book. And even if I did have a book, it wouldn't be the full story that it needed to be, because I would have left out some really important aspects of it. And at the time knew, actually, I didn't want to do that, because it wouldn't have felt true. And I wanted to tell the truth as much as I could. you know, if there's an element of fear, find a coach to help you work through that fear. And your book coach and your personal coach might be two different people because of their specialisms. And that's fine. And you might need to do one independent of the other. That's all fine. It's just about reaching out and finding it. And you can Google it. You can, you know, there are networking groups around, you know, try and tap into them. It might take a while to find someone that fits with you, because that's the other important part. It's a relationship. But, you know, that's what I did. Search around, ask questions, and, you know, hook up with someone, because that is a really great part of that journey.
Right. Do you think that someone... I think coaching is very important, and I think just being held accountable, regardless of whether that person is that, if where they're a book coach, quote unquote, or not, I just think being held accountable is an important step, just because it will make you keep your deadlines, make you keep your word, and when you've got to answer to someone other
absolutely
than yourself.
That really helped me, because left to myself we wouldn't even be having this conversation. So yes, it's really good to have one, and they you know, everything you said, they do hold you to account, help you to stick to those deadlines.
Right. This is your first book that you've written.
Yes.
Yes. Dreaming of the Life Unlived. Any plans in the pipeline for writing another book?
I'm thinking about it. I haven't done anything, so I probably need a coach now to work through this. But yeah, I am thinking about it. I would actually like to do a next chapter.
Okay.
It's something I'm going to think about more seriously next year and then make some decisions as to whether to go forward. But I think, you know, the way I feel about it is that it would be really nice for people to hear where are we now, because talking to the women myself, and they've read their stories, and I did a book party, first year anniversary book party recently, and we had a Q&A, and some of the women from the book were on the panel, and watching the video back, they turned around and said they're amazed at how far they have come. And sometimes you don't realize, because you're in a thing, and you know, you don't, your beginning and your ends all kind of mesh into one, and you don't see it for yourself. But when you can step back and look at it, you realize, oh my God, I've really come so far. And watching their journeys and seeing that has been so great. And I've been so glad that I've been able to witness that. So it'd be nice for people to see that. Because the other thing to this is women who are at the beginning of their journeys don't see that end point. You know, their tunnel is really dark at the moment, and they can't see the light. So to hear our stories, to hear that this is where we are now, to hear that there's still more to happen, is actually an important part. And I think people would love to hear those, that second chapter of our lives.
Yes. It reminds me a little bit of Oprah when you said that. She's got, I think it's called The Next Chapter now, because that's looking forward. It's got a nice sort of feel to that. One question I wanted to ask was in regards to the ladies featured, what were their rough age ranges?
So we've aged from 39 to 60.
Okay.
And most of us were in our 40s, various stages in our 40s.
Right. Would you say that the, with you in your own experience, one or two times you've touched on your past. So can you elaborate what you mean by dealing with the past?
I would describe myself as entering my 20s and not having a clue what I was doing. And I certainly didn't know how to date, and I didn't know how to, in a way, choose wisely. I'm not going to disrespect all the situations as I've been in and all the people I've come across. It's just when I look back, I wished I could have made better decisions. And I wish I knew myself more, that I was able to have more control in a way of what I was doing. And, you know, I think just being better at what I was deciding to do. But guess what? We were early 20s, we were young, you know, and this is what young people do. We do our things, we make our decisions, we make our mistakes, and guess what? We learn from them. Without them, we wouldn't be who we are today. Through that, I had two terminations, which was probably the biggest shame. Now I'm using that inverted commas, because I don't use those words anymore. But that was the biggest shame that I could have ever brought on myself and my family. And I was going to hide it away, put it in a box and never think about it again. So I went through my 30s in a way hiding from that. I even went to church and did the charismatic movement experience. Within that, you know, your sins are washed away and God has forgiven you. So I immersed myself in that, truly believing that, guess what, the past is the past and all of this is okay. I'm a new person. But the truth is I wasn't a new person. I was me who had all this baggage that I didn't know what to do with. And when I hit this place where I got told I got told I had unexplained infertility and I just knew in my heart I wasn't going to be a mum. All of that shame came flooding back. And being told I was in grief, I couldn't hear that. Because I thought, well, I haven't lost anything. But two, I just did not deserve it because of all the things, all the mistakes, all the shame that I had done in my past meant that I didn't deserve to be a mum. Those are the things I had to go back and deal with. And one of the things that Jody helped me to do was write a letter to my younger self. Because one of the things she said to me is, if your friend was in front of you and she told you this story, what would you say to her? And, you know, I would have dealt with her with love and compassion, but we don't deal with ourselves with love and compassion. You know, our inner voice kicks in and we're just like the worst things since, you know, we're evil, we're horrible, we're this, we're that. How could we have got ourselves into that situation? We're very critical. Writing that letter to my younger self helped me to look at her as if she was this young, vulnerable girl who hadn't got a clue, but who was actually just trying to live a life and trying to be okay and made decisions for a reason. And my decisions to terminate my pregnancies were because I wasn't in a relationship. I didn't want to be a single mum and I wanted the best for my children. I did have an ideal of what it should be, but I did want the best for them. Those situations weren't the best. And, you know, I was looking after myself and I was looking after my children.
And I think the key thing is, you know, you make a decision at a point in time based on where you are. And no one knows what the future is going to hold. So you can't be beating yourself up about a decision you made 10, 20 years ago today.
That is an absolutely good point.
That was the decision that was right for that point in time.
Yeah.
And leave it there. Well, that's very, very interesting. And thank you for sharing that. You were listening to The Authors Podcast with me, your host, Lisa Newton. You can email me, lisa@lisanewton.co.uk. And remember, we have The Inner Circle, which is for writers just like you. And you can join us at writerbook.net. So if you're tuning in, this fascinating book, you've got to get hold of it, Dreaming of the Life Unlived, written by Yvonne John. And it's a collection of stories of women who are childless by circumstance, coming to terms with their grief and moving towards finding fulfilling lives without children. You know, even sort of like the tagline there, Yvonne, I think, you know, finding fulfilling lives without children, I think it's only this idea in my mind, back to the society thing, it's like women need to find fulfilling lives without children. Men can do that anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always women that need to, you know, be doing something else. And I think it's fascinating. Tell me why, you know, if you're like, say if I'm a friend of someone, family member, what do you want to say to people like that who are well-meaning and, you know, basically, in my opinion, personally, I just think just being nosy, I wish they'd just mind their own business. But, you know, what would you like to say to no one in particular, you know, just, but, you know, for people out there listening to this that might think, oh, I've got a friend who ain't got any kids. And I'm always asking, you know, what do you want to say to someone like that?
Oh, so many things. Right. So I think, again, it does depend on the relationship you have, because if it's not something
even if the person is your daughter, you know, do they have a right? Because that's a very close relationship. Can a mum, you know, have a go at their daughter, or is it this, you know?
I think the whole thing is about dealing with compassion, because, you know, one thing we don't want to feel like is we're being criticised and judged. And finding compassion can be a difficult thing. I can really understand, because it depends how you put the question across and how it's received. So this is where the relationship comes to play, because certain people can say things to me and I take it in a different way to if I hear it from somebody else, because of, well, who are you to talk to me like that? I don't know you that well.
Yes.
So, you know, I think we've got to remember that there's that element of it. But putting that aside for a minute, it is about dealing with compassion. And you have to judge how the other person's responding to you to know how far you can take this. So, you know, have you got children? No, you know. Oh, you know, why is that? What, you know, is there a reason for that? Have you chosen that? You know, or is that just a circumstance? It's just starting gently. And as I said, seeing how that person's responding to you, because some people don't want to talk about it. And if you see that, then, you know, oh, it looks like that's really tough for you. Don't worry if you don't want to talk about it. I understand. You don't need to tell me anything more. When you're ready, I'm here to listen, you know. And sometimes having this book, one of the things people have relayed back to me is actually they can go, why didn't you read this book? Mm-hmm. And other women, I've had women not in that same place saying, I don't know what to say to my friend. You know, oh, I'm going to get that book to give it to her because I can see she's really upset. She's really sad about it. She doesn't want to talk. I can see you're really sad about it. I've heard there's a book out there. Would you like me to get it for you? Or, here, you know, I bought this book for you. You know, have a read and, you know, see what you think. When you're ready, I'm happy to talk to you a bit more about it. For me, there isn't that one thing. Mm-hmm. It really is about being open and compassionate and just judging the situation and realizing actually that person might not be ready and therefore you can't probe it. Or if they are ready to talk about more, let them talk. And don't offer them anything, you know, right. To offer them the gift of silence and care.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to fix it. You don't have to tell them the miracle baby stories. You don't have to ask them about adoption and IVF and show them that there is you know, you can still have a baby no matter what.
Yes. Like Janet Jackson at 50.
Oh, love you.
I saw you hear a lot of that.
Oh my God. My favorite I've got so many. One of my gems was, you know what? You don't need to be sad because look, you can still have a baby. Look at Janet Jackson. Yeah. It's like, thank you. No, but thank you. It was like, oh my God, I'm allowed to be sad and I'm just expressing that sadness because you know what, I am sad about it, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to go to the nth degree and do whatever it takes and be poor and have no house anymore because I've remortgaged it to the hills to have a baby. Because guess what? We are allowed to make choices in this. Great for the people who made the choice to try it and they were successful. Great for the people who have decided not to make the choice and find a different path for themselves, because we're all allowed to do that.
Absolutely. You were listening to the Authors Podcast with Lisa Newton. Please do subscribe to, like, and share this channel. So if you're tuning in, I am talking to Yvonne John, who is the author of Dreaming of the Life Unlived, Intimate Stories and Portraits of Women Without Children. Just a final question then. Well, I've got so many, but I know that this interview, I have to do a part two at this rate, but this interview's going on. But just to ask you then regarding,
Sorry, I lost you there. What was that?
Just to ask you then, has it affected your marriage and the emotional roller coaster of trying to conceive? Because that was one of the points that was brought up previously with a friend of mine.
I think that's one of the things I realised people didn't appreciate on my journey. And I, without being there, I don't think I would have really thought about it or appreciated it myself. We tried for 3 years to conceive. Now, I was 40 at the time we decided to try, and I'm 46 now. So for the first 3 years of our marriage, first 4 years of our marriage, we tried to have a baby. And at the beginning, it was great because we had lots of sex. You know, and for a man, you know, I think that's probably their ultimate goal. Anyway, that's what I believe. Sorry, men, I'm not trying to offend you. But, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, this is going to be great. He's going to love it. You know, sex on tap. Brilliant. And then, you know, after a year, it was like, this is strange. Because given that, you know, I conceived the first time before on both occasions, and actually it was probably the one and only time anyway, it didn't make sense to me that a year of trying with someone I loved and someone who I really wanted to have a child with, it wasn't happening. Year two, it became very tough. For me, the whole every month being hoped for and then shortly after that hope being dashed away because your body's saying, no, not this time, didn't make sense. That was difficult to handle. And also having doubts about, are we compatible? What's going on? I don't get this. And then my husband turning around at some point in this whole journey, being really angry at me and, you know, saying to me, you're just treating me like a piece of meat. That was really tough. When I heard that, I just stopped. It was really tough because sex and all that it can be beautiful about it became just this regimental, scheduled event. You know, I would do the ovulation test, knew I was ovulating, come on, let's get on with it. I didn't want the foreplay, I didn't want the kissing, the cuddling, I didn't want any of that affection, let's just get on with it. It just became like a robotic exercise, you know, and with an end point. And if that end point didn't happen, there was something wrong. It was horrible. It really was horrible for both of us. Then when I hit that had a year of fertility investigation, which is not pleasant. And obviously you've got the anxieties around it as well, because you want to know what's going on. You want to know what's wrong and where it is, because you need to name it and blame it. So we had that part of it. And I remember one point my husband was like, yeah, I'm fine. And I just looked at him with this resentment because I thought, you horrible person. I do want to use stronger words here. You're fine and you're dancing about it, and I'm left here feeling like it's all my fault.
Yeah.
So then we had to deal with that part of it. Then we got to this place where I got told I had unexplained infertility, and I wouldn't talk to my husband for 2 weeks. I just shut down. I mean, he got to the point where he's like, what, are you leaving me? What's going on? Is our marriage over? And I couldn't explain to him what was going on because I couldn't articulate it. But one of the things that I remember that was so strong for me was that I looked at him with so much resentment that I just didn't want to be around him. And I resented him. And in my head, he didn't want this child as much as I did. So why would he care that I'm not going to be able to conceive? Why would it matter to him? Why? And I just put that all on him. And, you know, it really did have a strain on us. We couldn't talk to each other. I found it very difficult to be around him. I mean, it's not that I wanted to divorce. I didn't want to leave him, but I just didn't want to be around him. And I was so sad. And it was a sadness that I didn't see in him. Which I couldn't understand again. It's like, why aren't you sad about this? And, you know, men show you things in different ways. And grief comes out at different stages as well. But, you know, I did. I was attacking him a lot in different ways. And I punished him a lot in different ways. Finding gateway women was a lifesaver because it helped me save my sanity. Because one of the things you do is you think that you're going mad. And I certainly felt like all my thoughts were bad and horrible and evil, and I'm going mad and I'm horrible for thinking this and la, 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 all sorts of things. So to realize that actually this was all normal, whatever you think, and I'll say that to any woman in this situation who, whatever you're thinking, it's normal. To know that and to hear that and to understand that and accept that was amazing, because then you can work through it. You can deal with it. You don't feel so alien in all of this anymore. But then it also created another divide with my husband, because now I was talking to them instead of him, because I had a safe place to talk. And some of my conversations were about him and our relationship that I needed to understand and work on that I couldn't talk to him about. But then he saw this divide, and that became another problem, because all of a sudden in his mind, I didn't need him anymore. When actually going home to him and getting a hug was amazing. It was, you know, some of the women who were single in my group, I could feel for them because they didn't have that place. And I had that, and it was great to know he was there. But again, we had to work on now repairing all of this damage that was happening in all the years. And we had to find a way to talk to each other again. It's almost like we had to discover who we are, because all of a sudden, I mean, we entered a marriage being childless, but we entered it with, you know, an agreement that actually we might not have children, but it would be okay. And then all of a sudden I changed the parameters by wanting a child, which my husband was like, what? But no, I'm having a great year here. This is fantastic. I want to add to that. And then, so he agreed we'd try. So then we're in this place where we'd have conversations about what our children would look like, who they'd gang up on. You know, we're going to girl and we're going to gang up on you. No, you're going to be like you, all of this stuff, you know. And I had images of what our daughter would look like. I could see her crawling onto my husband's lap and lying there as he's reading a book, and it was so vivid. So at every stage of this, these parameters were changing, and we were becoming different people within that. So, you know, all of a sudden we're these people, this couple who had hope of something, that then went to a place where that hope wasn't there anymore, and it was replaced with grief and sadness and horribleness. Then we had to find who we are again. We really did have to find out, who are we now without children? And that was huge. It was really huge. And I think it's something people, you know, what do you mean you didn't have them in the first place? So what are you talking about? But as I said, I changed the parameters. We were changing. Our mindsets were changing. Our hopes and dreams were changing. And then again, when it wasn't going to happen, it changed again. So we had to discover and rebuild that relationship. We had to find our love. We had to reconnect. And we had to, in a way, make promises to each other.
Yeah.
You know, that we still loved each other because of this.
Excellent. Fantastic. Yvonne, John, thank you very much for sharing and for being a guest on the Authors Podcast. Let the listeners know how they can get in touch with you. Do you do any coaching, or, you know, is there like a group or a retreat or something like that? Because I've got all these ideas like coming to my mind of like things that, you know, people might read your book and be like, oh my gosh, I've got, you know, I want to share too, or, you know, follow up if, you know, people are out there listening thinking, gosh, she sounds amazing. I, you know, how can people get in touch with you? Or is it just the book that you're doing at the moment, or do you do any one-to-one work?
So at the moment, for me personally, I just have the book. I also have my blog, which you mentioned before, which you can get at bit.ly/findingmyplanb. You can connect to me via my Facebook page, which is bit.ly/dreamingofalifeunlived. Sorry, it's Facebook. I've forgotten it. Oh my God.
No, it's facebook.com/dreamingofalifeunlived.
Thank you so much. Oh my goodness. I just went, drew a blank. So yes, you can contact me via my blog, via Facebook. You can go onto the Gateway Women website, because there are a lot of resources there, and they do a lot of different workshops. Reignite Weekends as well, which is a weekend, again, for women who are childless by circumstances that can come together. It's a facilitated group and work through that, the stages of those different stages, and work through their grief. It's a fantastic workshop. And I will be starting to train. So I should be doing workshops next year. So if you're on the Gateway Women website, just look out for that. And we'll start to advertise that once we know the dates and everything from there. But yes, I will start to connect with the coaching part of it and the Reignite Weekends from 2018.
Excellent. I know we've spoken a lot. Is there anything that I've not covered you wanted to add?
The only other thing I think I would add at this point is just to highlighting again, or reiterating the difficulties it is about talking about it. It really helped me, and I was in a very different position because I was writing the book, that it offered me that platform to go and talk to people about it. Because of that, I went back to my family and my friends. You know, in some respects, I wrote letters to people because I couldn't find the words. And it really helped me to say, here's a letter, and then they read it and then came back and asked me questions. So people who feel that they can't talk, write a letter. You know, it is important. I would encourage women to reach out. You know, as I said, there's Gateway Women, there's myself. There are other women out there, and you can find them through the forum. to just talk, to say something. But even writing a letter to yourself, you don't even have to share it with anyone, can be such a tremendous help. Because I find that things in my head, when it's in my head, it's just a mishmash of all sorts of stuff that I cannot make sense of. But as soon as I take it out and put it on paper and I can read it back, it helps me to see what's there and helps me to then go and find the help that I need to get. And I think that's very important. You know, it's horrible being on your own and feeling like you're silenced and feeling like you don't belong and no one gets it, even in the workplace. And I've had a number of experiences in the workplace where I don't feel as important as the mothers for various reasons. And that's another tricky part of this. You know, to have that place where you can say something, whatever you feel that you need to say, and you have your rant and you can scream and shout. It's such a vital thing, you know.
Things like staying late. Oh, you can stay late. You know, you haven't got kids to pick up, or half term. Oh, you can do it because...
You know what? Somebody relayed back to me that in a meeting, they were told that all the mothers with children could have time off during half term because it was important. And anyone else who doesn't have children won't get it.
Wow.
And I've heard similar, you know, it's important they get the time because they have the children and children are our future and they're an important ones. And I'm like, whoa, hang on a minute. And the thing is, I'm in a place where I can actually say something, even though I still have to control what I'm saying. But there are a lot of women out there that would just walk away and cry. And actually, I was in a restaurant with some friends. And, you know, different context, but the same kind of thing was behind it. And the waiter, I mean, he was just being friendly. Again, I know a lot of this comes out of innocence because people don't really think. And the reason why I'm here saying this, my book's important, and I'm encouraging people to say things is because again, as I said, we've lost our voice. So it's about regaining that. And when we were in this restaurant, this waiter was very friendly, bouncing, trying to engage in conversation. And he's asked us at the time, this was a while ago, if we'd seen the film
Boss Baby. Yeah, I read this on your blog. Yeah, carry on. It's very, very good point you made. Yeah.
So now two of the ladies were like, yeah, you know, I actually asked him, why would it be important that we have children to watch that film? He said, oh, because if you're a mum, you'd be able to relate to it. And I was like, what? Now, I hadn't seen the film, but I knew what it was about. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. And I turned around and I said, look, I'm going to say this to you as gently as I can. But I found that comment very offensive. And I know a lot of women that would run out of this restaurant crying after hearing what you've just said. And he was, I mean, again, I didn't want him to go away with the most negative experience and feel like I've told him off and he's destroyed his confidence. But what I wanted to relay is actually just because.
So there was three of you sitting there. And he came up to you and asked, are any of you mothers?
That's right.
And then said, have you seen the film Boss Baby?
Yeah.
You'd really get it if you were a mum.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. And I was offended. And I know women that would have, and at a different time, I would have been the same. I would have left them being crushed, absolutely crushed. And, you know, I just thought, well, actually, you don't have to be a mother to have understood this. I said to him, I have nieces and nephews. I'm a godmother. I have friends with children. I do kind of have some understanding of what that parent-child relationship is. And actually, the film isn't about that dynamic anyway. And it was very, I've seen it since. It's very entertaining. I was on the floor laughing at some points. It was brilliant. But, you know. And it also leads women to feel like, childless women, to feel like they have to defend their position. I'm not a mum, but I've got loads of godchildren. I've got loads of nieces and nephews. No, but I'm, you know, it's like, why does that have to be the case? You know, we don't have to defend ourselves. This is what we are and this is what we're about. And we still matter.
That's right. Excellent. You were listening to The Authors Podcast with me, your host, Lisa Newton. You can email me, lisa@lisanewton.co.uk. And remember, we have The Inner Circle, which is for writers just like you. And you can join us at writerbook.net. I've been talking to Yvonne John. The book is Dreaming of the Life Unlived, Intimate Stories and Portraits of Women Without Children. It's available from the website bit.ly/A Life Unlived.
Yep, that's the Amazon link.
That's the Amazon links. Or if you go straight to Amazon, type in Yvonne John, Dreaming of the Life Unlived, the book will pop up.
Yep.
If you want to connect with Yvonne, you can go to www.facebook.com/Dreaming of a Life Unlived. We've mentioned Gateway Women. That's another useful resource. Do check them out. And a couple of other books by Jodie Day, Living the Life Expected, and another of your favourite books, I'm Taking My Eggs. Is it And Going Home?
I'm Taking My Eggs and Going Home, yes. And Jodie's book is Living the Life Unexpected.
Unexpected, Living the Life Unexpected. Some reading for those of you out there that are interested in this topic. I think it's fascinating. It's one of those kind of taboo subjects that I'm sure if this statistic is going to increase, which says that 1 in 5 women in the UK have turned 45 without having children, will be more and more sort of prevalent and out there. And we're all going to know someone. Oh, actually, there was one thing that I wanted to just say, which was, if you remember, 2017, it was when there was the election in the UK with the Prime Minister. Trying to think, it was the UK Tory Prime Minister, Theresa May, and there was the other lady. I don't know if it was another Tory lady or another one.
It was. They were running for
Prime Minister.
The candidates for the Prime Minister, yeah.
Yes. And one of them said to the other, to Theresa May, can't remember who the other woman was, but, you know, I thought it was very interesting the way the media handled it, which was, I thought, was to slap her down straight away, quite frankly, which... She came up and said, oh, I'd make the better candidate because I've got children. And even Theresa May at one point, you know, got asked the question, oh, so you and your husband, you don't have children. And, you know, she went into that. Whereas when we've had a previous prime minister in the UK, a man, I think it was Ted Heath, who didn't have any children. It wasn't even part of the topic. It was just like, and so what? So I thought that was very interesting, the way, you know, this woman attacked Theresa May like that. But I felt that the media defended Theresa May quite well and was just like, well, you know, what has that got to do with anything and her ability to be able to be the Prime Minister of the UK?
Absolutely. It was an interesting time. And I think a lot of childless women out there were horrified by the comment, but absolutely ecstatic about the fact that how it was handled.
Yes.
And the fact that actually there was that, you know, what's this got to do with it element of the whole the situation. And it does, you know, it goes back to no one asks men these questions. I mean, I remember Jodie saying there are so many childless women out there, but where are the childless men? Because people don't attribute it all in the same way. You know, it was great that I was glad she was shut. I can't remember her name and I'm trying to look it up at the moment.
Oh, well, let's not even mention her, but yeah.
She got shut down
quite quickly. I was almost surprised. Well, I was surprised. I was very surprised. I just thought, you know, in the year 2017 and people are still coming up with that, you know.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me at all, I suppose, because of the work I've been doing.
Yes.
It just highlighted, it actually brought it to the forefront what a lot of us women are going through on a day-to-day basis anyway, especially at work, you know. And it just brought it, as I said, it just brought it to the forefront and it became a huge thing because it was in the media, in the public eye. It did resonate with a lot of women. There was a lot of outcry with it because, actually, it was a crappy thing to say. It really was.
Yes.
And we are seeing this every day. I see it a lot. You know, I've seen it a lot. And I've struggled to know what to do with it. And there are policies out there that don't support childless women. So, you know, there is a big divide.
But I think books like yours will bring attention and highlight to have more compassion and sensitivity around the subject area, because everyone's circumstances are different. Sometimes it's a lifestyle choice and sometimes it's sort of a choice made for people upon them. Excellent. Well, it's been, the time has just flown by. Gosh, Yvonne, I just want to thank you very much. You've shared a lot. I hope the listeners out there have enjoyed this. I've enjoyed talking to you. And I want to thank you very much for sharing and, you know, being very open with your story and everything. I think it will inspire a lot of people, encourage people to come forward and talk to others or, you know, find a support group, talk to people in the same sort of situation, perhaps, and not to feel like, you know, you're on your own or, you know, you're the only person in the world feeling a certain way. There's other people out there too.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your show as well. I'm so grateful.
Excellent. Okay, so thank you. That's Yvonne John. You can get the book, Living of the Life Unlived, Intimate Stories and Portraits of Women Without Children. It's available on Amazon, bit.ly/A Life Unlived. You can read the blog, which has got stories with Yvonne in the restaurant and in other situations and circumstances, bit.ly/FindingMyPlanB. And on Facebook, www.facebook.com/DreamingOfALifeUnlived. My name's Lisa Newton. I have been your host today. I do hope you've enjoyed the podcast, and I'll see you on the next episode of The Authors Podcast. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Authors Podcast with Lisa Newton, sponsored by Boogles Limited. Tweet the show at Boogles_books, spelled Booglez_books. You can also contact your host via the email address lisa@lisanewton.co.uk. And if you want to join our authors community, join the inner circle at www.writerbook.net. You have just been listening to The Authors Podcast with Lisa Newton. See you next time.